Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another Terrorist Podcast. Well, we've got a bit of an action-packed show this evening for everybody. We are joined now by Tom Prodomo, who's going to discuss the recent new sign-ins that we've announced today. We've also got, later on the show, we've got Cameron Murray and Kelvin Brooks. We've also got the legend that is Willie Gibson. The chairman will also be joining us regarding the news that was announced about the playoffs and things like that this week, so we'll be discussing that. But right now, Tom Prodomo, how's your afternoon going?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you, Ben. How are you?
I'm very good, but I'm intrigued. We've signed two new players from Poole Town, Josh Leslie Smith and Jack Dixon. What can you tell me about these new players?
Well, obviously it's our first opportunity to welcome them to the football club. They're two players that we've looked at for a little while now. They very much fit our profile for the club, which is, you know, young, talented players, and particularly ones that are available in the local area. They're few and far between, so we're really excited to have them on board and look forward to working with them.
What is it you think they can bring to the side? I understand they're two very versatile players. What is it you're looking to get out with these new signings, Tom?
Yeah, I think versatility can sometimes be looked upon as a little bit of a negative comment or something that's used against players, but, you know, they are both very capable in multiple positions, and I think, you know, we change the way we play in terms of our formation throughout the season. So I think that adaptability, you know, speaking to both of them, that they're good characters that will fit into the group as well. So that's really important because, you know, our group is a competitive one. There's high standards that they'll have to get used to quickly. But, you know, we're very confident that they have the qualities both on the pitch and in their character to deal with those demands.
Are they players that you've been watching for a long time? Is this a case of sending scouts up on a regular basis? Or because they were relatively local, playing for Poole Town, are they just players that you're aware of and have been watching more recently as the season's wound up?
I mean, yeah, if you look at them separately, from a personal point of view, Jack Dixon is someone that I worked with when I first joined college kind of 6-7 years ago. So he's someone I've worked with very closely and been aware of a long time. So with that intimate knowledge of him, and also the rest of the staff that seen him in our matches against Poole Town in recent years, and then we feel like we've got a really good knowledge of him. Josh is someone, again, that's been involved in the Bournemouth system, so in terms of character references, they've been easy for us to gather. But like you say, we have got an extensive staff. We have got a lot of good people that work very hard for us, so, but, you know, they've both been seen in fixtures across the last couple of seasons, really. So they're players we've tracked for a little while, and we just felt like now was the right time to bring them in, and, you know, both from our point of view, but also for the opportunity for them, just felt like it was perfect timing.
And what about initiation into the club? Is there any songs being lined up for the two new boys to sing?
I'm not too sure at the moment. We tend to leave that to the boys, but, you know, they are a welcoming group. There's obviously always that early stages of testing out your new teammates, but I think with the way football works locally, they're quite familiar to the guys anyway, and they're very welcoming. But I'm sure they're sure there might be some activity when we're back on a coast and away again, yeah.
Well, we certainly look forward to seeing them turning out for the Claret and Blue. Just before I let you go, Tom, because I don't want to take up too much of your Saturday, and especially in this lovely weather we're having down on the coast. But before I let you go, can you tell me what the tentative plans are for pre-season? Obviously, we're looking at coming back for a September start. That's the given tentative date. Obviously, it's not set in stone at the moment. If that were the case, how would we start thinking about pre-season? Would we be getting back in August?
Yeah, I think, you know, it is a very difficult one, and we've had to remain in constant communication, and, you know, you have to be adaptable and agile in the challenges that we've been facing lately. But we've got our intended plans in place, so. And, you know, pre-season will be slightly longer than it would normally, just to allow us to make sure that we're right up to speed for the new season. So we'll probably look for a July start. We've already been working with our training facility to make sure that we can do that in a safe way that reflects the guidelines out there. But I think, ultimately, the boys have been looking after themselves away from the regular action of training and games. So those plans are very much coming together now. Obviously, we need some kind of definitive dates before you can put anything concrete in place. And I think the whole football pyramid is still watching on and looking the best way that they can come back to prepare their players. But whenever that is and how soon that is, you know, we'll be ready and we'll be raring to go for the new season.
So, ready and raring to go, I can take that's a prediction of Weymouth National League South Champions 2021, yeah?
You know, absolutely. We're always aiming to push our boundaries. I think I said last time that we spoke, we have had a fantastic season this year. Obviously, a lot of that's being played out in the media at the moment in terms of how is it going to end, is it ending, and questions are being asked. But, you know, whatever happens, we certainly don't feel like we've hit our limit. I think the two players coming in will certainly help us to stretch the boundaries that we set ourselves. But let's not forget as well, we're adding to a fantastic squad that has been brilliant for this club over the last few years. And I just think it's a really exciting time for everyone still.
Absolutely brilliant. Tom, we're going to let you go because we've got a bumper show, and we're going to go get the chairman who wants to discuss the ongoing playoff situation. But thank you for taking the time to come and speak to us about the new signings. Would you be interested in coming on a podcast again and we could talk about the squad going forward in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, anytime. You're more than welcome.
And Tom, we're by no means saying you're not bumper, by the way. You know that.
Yeah, I know my place. Don't you worry.
Cheers, Tom.
Thank you very much, guys. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Tom Prodomo, ladies and gentlemen, who's absolutely delighted with the new signings. We've got the chairman coming on. It does take me a little bit of sad news coming out of the club this week. We'd like to, as a football club and as a podcast and a media team, we'd like to pass our sincerest condolences to the friends and family of Mr. Clive Parker, who sadly passed away. Obviously a very sad loss. It's another loss in the Terrace family, and we pass on our sincerest condolences. But we're going to get straight on with the action of the show here because we are joined by the chairman, Ian White. Ian, how are you this afternoon?
Yeah, hello. Hi, Ben. Yeah, I'm fine, thank you. Good evening to everyone. Great to be on again.
It's always a pleasure to have you, Ian. I want to jump straight into this because I've got a lot that I want to get off my chest, but we're going to save this for the official line from the club first. The playoff picture, the ever-changing playoff picture, it seems that there are conflicting tweets coming out from different journalists. Some are saying the playoffs are not going to happen. Some are saying they're still on the table. We understand the National League has sent out a voting, or is sending out a voting form for the rest of the clubs. Can you indulge us? Can you give us a little bit more detail from a club point of view, Ian, on the situation at the moment?
Me and Football Secretary Pete Saxby were involved in a National South Zoom meeting, committee meeting on Thursday afternoon, where several things were discussed, and of course the playoffs is one of them. Obviously this is where the start of the season in September has come up, which, as you quite rightly say, is a very, very... It's not set in stone because nobody knows yet, and there will be so many things that the club itself will have to put into place. I don't want to talk about other clubs, I just want to talk about us. So we went through this meeting 6 weeks ago, just a little bit of meat on the bone here. 6 weeks ago, the league asked for a consultation from the clubs, basically asking whether or not they wanted to play in the playoffs. At that stage, six weeks ago, of course, we did. And of course we did. And we held a sort of little board meeting with Mark Mosley, the manager, involved. And it was decided then that if the opportunity came for Weymouth Football Club to take part in the playoffs, we would. That hasn't changed as far as we are concerned. If the opportunity comes, we will, of course, look at it properly. What has changed is it will be more expensive to play the playoffs than we thought it would be 6 weeks ago. That's probably the fairest way to say this, because we will have to do lots of testing. The league table will be finalised. We will finish third. So playoff-wise, if they happen, we would have at least one home game to play, possibly two if we won the first one. But there will be a lot involved, deep cleaning, all sorts of things, and it is slightly different to when we discussed 6 weeks ago. However, nothing has changed. If the opportunity comes, the club will do all it possibly can to try and participate in the playoffs. The problem seems to be about around the word elite this seems to be where the problem is coming up from, and whether or not step two in the non-league pyramid, which we are, is an elite league, and that seems to be where most of the battle is going on at the moment. We have the likes of, so I wasn't going to discuss the other clubs, but Havant and Dorking are trying their hardest to put a very big pace up for the reason for the playoffs to be being played, and totally understand that. And as I've already said, we are, we would not turn it away. We would have, obviously, at board level, we've done a lot for this. We've done a lot with this club to get us into the position we are in, not just with the team and Mark, but obviously off the field as well. We've worked really hard, and we finished third this season without breaking the bank. We stayed in our budget all the way through, and we have to look at the club's future as well as, and of course, the club's future in the next league up would be obviously the next great step, and that's what we would want. So, until this is finally decided, I can't comment on a vote because we haven't received the resolution yet and we don't know what it's going to be. I've seen the tweets from other journalists that are actually saying that the non-playing of the Step 2 playoffs is now off the table, but we haven't seen that, so I can't comment whether that is or isn't.
I mean, those tweets, I've seen a couple of those tweets. One of them's from Ian Dennis, obviously, who's a respected BBC journalist. Ollie Bayliss has also retweeted it again. Answer me this, Ian. If the playoffs were come onto the table, is it likely that it's going to be unaffordable for us as a football club to play them?
Well, we don't know how much it's going to cost, Ben.
I mean, is there a ballpark figure?
Well, the ballpark figure we've been given is 50k, but we don't know whether we think that might be a bit exaggerated. We're not sure yet. You know, there would have to be a lot put in to understand whether or not, you know, exactly how much it would cost us because of the testing. We would have to test all the players. We would have to deep clean the Bob Lucas Stadium each time that the players and the staff that were involved were at the stadium. And that's every time they were at the stadium. So whether they, you know, obviously this isn't just a case of the players turning up at 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon or whenever the game's going to be and play it. They have obviously, yes, as Tom has just said to you, they have been, and I know they have been, they've been working very hard during lockdown to keep themselves fit. And, you know, you mentioned on several occasions Yemi's workout, which I'm not sure whether that's keeping them fit or just wrecking them, but one or the other, but he's certainly doing a lot of good. So I think we've got to realise that this could be, we could be talking 3 to 4 weeks that this could come. They will try to fit, I would imagine if they go ahead, they'll try and fit them into a week. Basically, we would probably, the club itself, I'm sure Mark and the players would need at least 2, maybe 3 weeks of training to get ready for it. So all through that, the same setup would be as what is happening with the other leagues above us. I can't say how much it's going to cost. It's impossible to know, and that will be until we get a final decision from the National League, one way or the other, and some sort of timescale if it is going to happen. If you wanted my real thought on it, I'm not sure it will happen. I think I don't know. I think that. But as I said, I've already had a couple of people. I've already been told a couple of people are asking, don't we want to play in the playoffs? Well, no, that's not fair. Of course we do. Of course we do. Why wouldn't we want to? But the future of the club's very important to every single board member and every member of the Terrace family, I hope, because that is important. But there might be ways that. But until we get proper figures and proper ideas of what's going to happen, it's, in some ways it's just pie in the sky, isn't it? Nobody really knows yet what's happening.
I mean, yeah, it does make sense, and you're quite right. The future of the football club is the most important thing. And I don't think anybody would disagree with that. I think it's we're in a position where there's been a lot of loss of life. So don't get me wrong. I know that takes priority, and I'm completely on board with that. It just feels like a bit of a kick in the teeth from a supporter's point of view to work as hard as we have, you know, and to yourself, Ian, worked as hard as we have to get to where we are, and then just to sort of for it all to be for nothing, essentially. It's just really frustrating, isn't it?
Well, it is. But you hit the nail on the head. You know, every week on the podcast, you always say about staying safe, about mental health, about how important everything is. And we've had over 40,000 people die. Football is important to all of us. I know that. I wouldn't expect it to be any different. Yes, it's disappointing. It is disappointing. Of course it is. But none of us saw this coming. Let's be honest. I think we were lucky to play Slough, personally. I think we were very lucky to play Slough because all the others had stopped. And it just stopped. It wasn't like we had 3 or 4 weeks warning of this. It just stopped. And we all sat there and went, ugh. And all of us, and I think every single club in the league, every single club from Liverpool down to Falmouth Town down in Cornwall, all wanted the season to finish. Of course they do. Everybody does. Everybody, you've got your clubs that, I think there were 2 or 3 clubs in the levels below us that had even won promotion already. And so it is gutting. But none of us had control over this. This wasn't our fault, it wasn't the players' fault, it's not the supporters' fault, it's not the National League's fault, it's just happened. And however sad and however unfortunate it is for us, at least, you know, what has happened has just been unbelievable with the amount of people that have died. It's just frightening, and I think that if we get the chance to play, we'll get the chance to play, and if we can do it, we will, of course, do it. But we won't. I can't say one way or the other until we have some idea of what is actually going to happen.
Why do you think it's taken too long for the National League and the EFL together to make a decision? Because the communication, from what I gather, and don't get me wrong, to anybody listening, I've absolutely no party to this. This is just my opinion from the outside looking in. It's nothing to do with the football club. But it seems to me that the communication between the three bodies, the National League, the EFL and the Football Association, the communication has been really poor. Is that something you'd agree with, Ian?
Early on, maybe. National League worked great at the very beginning. Thursday's meeting actually was very good and they answered lots of questions. We were both me and Pete would give them their due. They did. I think the reason why this is taking so long is the EFL, because the National League spent many, many years getting the two up. I'm sure fans, you know, especially the older fans, will remember that the non-league side of football had to be elected into the Football League many, many years ago, and it was almost impossible at times to get in there. And they won their two promotion slots, and I think the reason the National League were waiting was that they wanted to make sure that they could keep those two promotion slots, because if they'd have lost them, it could have been years before they regained them. There is every chance of that, and I think that's why it has taken so long. And finally, last week, the decision of the EFL came about. Even to the point now, I think if you go and look on TV scheduling, that the playoffs for League One and League Two are now pumped in and ready to go. So that's why it's taken so long. Recently, the communication has been a bit better. At least we've had some idea that we had somebody from the FA at the meeting on Thursday, and they would answer anything that you asked. So, so it was much better on Thursday. It has got better. It has got much better.
Perhaps I'm being slightly naive here, I'm not really sure, but I mean, let's go back to the cost it's going to be for testing the players and deep cleaning the Bob Lucas Stadium should we have to play at home in the playoffs and the playoffs go ahead. Do you agree with me that perhaps the Football Association should be taking some of that burden?
Possibly. Nobody knows whether that's going to happen. That's the point. I don't know. I don't know whether they should or shouldn't. And possibly they should, but again, as I've said earlier on, this isn't the FA's fault. This has just happened. So it is what it is. You know, we all want to be safe. We all want to be. You know, I'm not going to lie. I think that I would have. You know, and I think there will be lots of fans that will do this. They will think. Probably, I suppose it depends when we all come back to play football. But I think, well, whatever happens, if we did get the opportunity to play the playoffs, it will be behind closed doors. So there will be some people who will have to go to the ground to make that happen, and I'm sure there'll be some. If I'm one of them, I will have to think whether I do or don't, because of my own personal circumstances with, you know, my wife and my special needs daughter. So there's lots of reasons why it's not going to be easy for this to be done. And should the FA pay problem? But, you know, at the end of the day, I don't know, because we don't know what the structure of anything will be if it happens. So until we get some sort of decision whether or not we're going to do it, I'm not sure what will happen. And then if it does happen and the opportunity comes, then we'll be able to sort out how much we think it's going to cost.
I mean, it is a really interesting insight, Ian. I think there are a lot of people that don't quite understand exactly the thought process that goes into this. That's why I'm so delighted to have you on this afternoon, because it gives a fresh perspective and it gives everybody a sort of... What I was most delighted to hear you say was obviously that we do want to play the playoffs, for example. There'll be certain supporters out there that just think that we've given up on this, which obviously we haven't. But, I mean, what is your gut feeling at the moment? How are you feeling about going forward? If we ignore the playoffs for a second, would you think that we'd be ready for a September restart to the season? Again, I know it's up in the air and it's hard to say, but what would your gut feeling be?
I think the reason that we're talking about September is because there has to be a link between the EFL and the non-league. I'm not sure the EFL, for example, have actually said when League Two is going to commence. I don't think I've seen anything. Because there has to be a question of whether certainly League Two can play behind closed doors. They're two steps above us. I know how important gate money is for each part of the club's income. Paying behind closed door for a season would be very, very difficult. And you have to sort of ask the questions that if you were to play the playoffs, and let's say they decided you were going to play the playoffs at the end of July, for example, are we saying then by the beginning of September there'd be no testing needed? I don't think so. So I think that, you know, where would we be then? Would we have to actually be testing as we went into a new season? That's the other thing, you know, and I think it's a difficult one. I think how will the season start when they allow fans to come into the ground? There are several thoughts on it. One is that you'll have reduced capacities. What we're lucky with, really, is that we've got quite a nice big stadium. So if we had to, whatever the decision was, I think we would be able to, apart from the very big games, like your Boxing Day games and that, I think we'd probably be able to accommodate near enough our normal attendance. But that hasn't even been decided yet. So will it start in September? I really hope so, but I don't know. I can't see that we won't be tested in September. And if we're going to allow people in to watch the games, are they all going to have to be tested? Then where are we then? I don't know. As you say, it is at the moment a little bit, they've pushed it back a month. The original start was August the 8th, which never was going to be. It's gone back another month. Will it happen from September? I don't know, Ben, to be honest. We all want it to, but we don't know where we're going to be. You know, we don't know, let's face it, we don't know where we're going to be in 2 weeks' time. So I don't know is the answer to that. I hope we are. I know we'll be ready, I know we'll be okay, and I know we're ready to go. And Mark's raring to go, and the players are raring to go, and so are the board, and I know all the Terrace family will be. I'll be really up for it. But we have to be safe to do it, and that's the important thing.
Would you support a notion of restructuring the way that football's run in this country following this pandemic? Pandemic?
You've said pandemic so many times.
I know. But I mean, my theory is you've got the National League, you've got the EFL, you've got the EPL, and of course you've got the FA that's supposed to override all of them. That doesn't seem to be the case. And with every individual league making their individual decisions and looking at individual problems, would you support a restructuring at this point and trying to bring a positive out of this?
I think that if if we were going to do it, I think if we were going to do it, this is the time to do it, because I think this is the opportunity to do it. There's no doubt that obviously there's going to be issues with travelling for a start. We're going to have issues with travelling, there's no doubt about that, unless something dramatic changes over the next 3 to 6 months. Me and Pete Paley, who of course runs a travel club, we've already been talking about this, that there are going to be huge problems. There's no doubt about that. Yes, do I think we should be doing something? Yeah, I do think we should be. What do I think is going to happen? I don't know. I think that I don't think there'll be as many full-time clubs as there currently are, because I think clubs just won't be able to do it. I think there will be a complete change in how clubs will operate. Should it be regionalised? Probably it should be, but I don't think it will be. I think there's been a couple of excellent articles in the non-league paper in the recent few weeks from Paul Doswell at Havant, saying that this is the time to regionalise it, that this is the time to look at it. But you'd have to get, there are so many bodies that you'd have to get to agree, because there are even thought that people are even thinking that League One and League Two should be regionalised. Because of the travelling involved, there is going to be a huge problem with travel. It'll be interesting to see how the Premiership are doing it. Obviously, they've got more money, bigger facilities, and everything. But I think you've got next Saturday you've got Crystal Palace coming to Bournemouth, so I presume they're coming to Bournemouth. So how do they travel? It'll be interesting to see how it all works out, I think.
Well, I think they could potentially use the Premier League's example as the poster for how to do it going forward. But again, you just touched on it there. The difference in the money between the Premier League, even the Championship, and our level and below is astronomical, isn't it? So it's going to be challenging all the way. I think I would prefer a restructure. I think something has to be done at this stage. You've seen teams go out of Bury, Macclesfield are being docked points left, right and centre, not paying their wages and that sort of thing. I mean, there is definitely something affecting this club, and if you can reduce the amount of money spent on travel and things like that, then surely that can only be a good thing.
Yeah, totally right. I think it's totally right. Can only be. I think there is a little bit of general talk about salary caps and things like that. I think that's being talked about in most of the leagues at the moment, and there are positives and negatives on that one as well. The salary caps. If you look at salary caps, if you brought them in to this league so far, certainly this season we just played, we'd be in a salary cap because we performed really well on a very tight budget, which has been important. And that's all credit to Paul and to Mark that they kept inside it. And it just shows the quality of the management and the team to be able to do it. I do really think there's an opportunity to restructure. I just don't think it's going to happen. I was talking to Pete exactly on Thursday after the meeting about this, about whether or not it's difficult to know how many clubs will actually go under from this, because in some ways we're in a false position, because clubs are being helped out a little by government and things like that. Pete thinks that maybe we've gone past that point now, that maybe the clubs will, because they're, because you've got all sorts of contracts and everything to look at as well, which again is nothing that at the moment you've got to work out how you're going to fall with it. I think sadly there's going to be a lot of players that thinks what's going to happen. I just think, well, because however much money the Premiership teams have got, and some of them have got certainly money, some of them will be in a different situation, because they, the smaller ones within the Premier League probably will. I'm not suggesting any major decision, but this, I don't think they would. They might cut their cloth player-wise. There's a chance when that'll just rumble down. So we'll have to wait and see.
The club announced two new signings today. Have come in. We've just spoken to Tom Perdomo about them and how they're going to be welcomed to the club. Do you have a big part in the signing of players, or do that to the full side of things? And also, market a little bit more for the new season, whenever that may be.
Well, the loan market, that's up to Mark at the end of the day. That's his for him to make the decision. I don't know. We've still got the relationship with Bournemouth, which of course we have, and that always helps us. So, yes, I would imagine. But One of the nice things about being chairman, actually, because I knew about these two several weeks ago, so it is one of the things that is different for me, having, you know, being chairman as well. Now I do get to, I do get told about the signings. Yeah, I do. They do tell me, and I get told who we're trying to sign, etc., etc. But again, that's mainly all down to Mark. It's his decision who he wants to bring in, as long as he's inside the budget that the board has set.
You are in a group chat. You can trust the media to see this information. Yeah.
I don't do that, you see.
we've noticed.
It's been one of the, first, it's one of the bonuses of being the chairman, isn't it? So you do get to hear it. But yeah, I'm pleased for the two new signs. I know Jack Dickinson, they've been looking at for a while. So I'm quite pleased with it. Yeah, I think it's good. I think it's really, because good players around us, and it's good, you know, if we, especially if I think it's a huge testament to, you know, Mark and the boys and the management team, because they look and they you know, they've got to be quite special players for Mark and them to want them, and I think that's quite important. And quite often they see stuff in them that means that, you know, 1-2 years down the road they will be, you know, a top quality player for the football club, which is what we want. You know, that's where we want. That's why we look at them, and I think it's really clever. It's quite interesting watching how they do it. So, yeah, it is good.
Well, listen, Ian, thank you for taking the time out and giving us a little bit of insight into everything today. It's really been it's been quite educational, hasn't it, Josh? It's been it's good to know.
Yeah, just from my point of view, I won't add too much to what the chairman's already said, but these discussions have been going on for so long. It at times it's wearing, and you know, the main thing is that, and I echo the chairman's sentiments there, let's just make sure it's all safe, because that's the most important thing for everybody.
Yeah, I think Josh is right there, but I think the other thing that Josh has said is quite right, because the last 48 hours I felt like I'm in a boat on my well, not on my own, because I've got some great people with me, but floating down a river, avoiding sharks, because it's just been crazy since Thursday. It's just been madness since Thursday. And it's so difficult, you know. I get it. I totally get it. I get the managers especially, because they, you know, Mark was ringing me Friday morning. They want to play it. Of course they do. I get it. Totally get it. Of course they do. And I wouldn't expect it any different. And so do we, as I've already said. So, but at the end of the day, we don't actually have a say in it at the end of the day. At the end of the day, no. It will come as a directive from somebody that will say yes or no. And then if it's no, then it'll be no. We all hope maybe it won't be, but we will have to look at it when it all comes, if it all comes together.
Just before we go in as well, I did want to sort of say as well that if the season was to end and we finished third, me and you have mentioned a few times on various phone calls and various other people as well, from a board's point of view, I know that you'll agree with this, to finish third in our first season back at this level in such a long time is something for us as a club to be immensely proud of. Who knows what might happen? We might play the playoffs. If we don't. We might have gone on to win the playoffs. But let's just also say that what an achievement it's been.
Oh, crikey, yeah. The other way of looking at this, there's two other ways of looking at this, and I've said this to Ben on a couple of occasions I've been on. We've actually finished 27th.
Yeah,
in the whole pyramid, because there are 24 teams in the National Prem, and then we're third. Okay, there's a North as well, but so you can say we finished equal 27th if you wanted to argue with it. There's that. But let's go back a couple of seasons. 97 points on the board. Playoff at King's Lynn got absolutely walloped by 3 wonder goals, but we made the playoffs for the first time in the club's history. The next season, we went on and won the league. We've made the playoffs again. Whether we play them or not, we've made the playoffs. So what's next then? Well, if we follow the run of things, we're going to win the National South next year, and then where will we be? So, yes, it's disappointing. It's hugely disappointing. And, you know, but God, can we all be really, really proud of our football club, and so proud of every single person from the board, through Mark, through Paul, through the management team, through the players, through every single volunteer that helps us in whatever way they do it, right through to every single fan that's part of this Terrace family, because that's why we've got where we are. Not because of one person, we've got to where we are because everybody has pulled in the same direction, every single person.
Well said, Mr. Chairman.
And it's made us what we are now. And yes, let's just keep it going, because I've really got sneaking suspicion that we've got better times to come. I really think we have.
Well, Ian, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. It's been really insightful. We're going to let you get back to your weekend, and hopefully we'll have some more news over the weekend.
He might be able to enjoy the rest of his weekend now, hopefully.
I don't think he will. I don't think he will.
I don't know. I've got another hour and a half of the podcast to go. Yeah, I'm going to be listening to...
Well, Willie Gibson's on the way, and I'm sure that'll be great.
All right, OK.
I'm going to talk in the meantime, so if you wouldn't mind muting for 15 minutes or so, Chairman, so I don't get fired,
yeah,
that'd be ideal.
Yourself. All right, see you later.
Cheers, Ian.
Bye.
Ian White, ladies and gentlemen, and he's obviously immensely proud of everything we've achieved at the football club this year. We're going to get Willie Gibson on the show ready to go, and Josh, you're going to ramble for a few minutes.
Yeah, please need Willie Gibson coming on, somebody that I personally know very well. Club legend, Hall of Famer as well, somebody that was inducted into the Hall of Fame back in 2019. I'm absolutely delighted to say that we have the one and only Hall of Fame legend Willie Gibson on the phone with us now. Good afternoon, Willie.
Afternoon, Josh. How are you?
Very good, thank you. How are you on this wonderful South Coast afternoon?
Same as yesterday, same as the day before.
It's a bit like that at the moment, isn't it? Who knows what day it actually is?
That's right, yeah. I'll have to look at the airport and find out, to be honest.
Yeah, that's right. Willie, we're so pleased to have you on. Somebody, again, who I actually will shamelessly give a plug here, a quiz partner of mine, somebody who knows football almost as well as I do, which is very impressive. Willie, I just want to first of all say, how have you been finding these difficult times personally? I mean, you know, we know you're a football man. From a football point of view, what do you make of it all?
Personally, I've in a funny sort of way, I've kind of not missed it, because the seriousness of everything else that's going on around us, whether it's personal or within the town, the county, whatever. But I'm glad to see there is some sort of football starting up again, obviously. But personally, I would just like to see it forgotten this season. I think that would be the easy way out, and just start again next year.
Yeah, I mean, below us, in terms of Southern League down, they null and voided almost immediately. When sort of we found out that there was no chance we were going to carry on playing football. Are you somebody that thinks, I mean, I know that this view is shared by so many other people, that yeah, we should just scrap it and actually let's just forget about this one. Let's move on and actually come back when it's safe to do so.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know the sort of financial ins and outs of it, but I mean, if it's not safe for the lads from the lower leagues, if you like, to play, I can't see it being safe for the players in the higher leagues. I know, again, it's probably down to money, with the Premier League especially. And it can lead, obviously, to promotions, relegations. But you're not going to please everybody, however way they do it. And it's difficult, I know, but I think they've done the right thing with the lower leagues, personally, and just carry on next year.
And what about football behind closed doors? It's just, I mean, from a personal point of view, when you played, what was that like? Did you ever witness and experience that sort of feeling of playing with no spectators?
Yeah, I did, actually. I remember going to Canterbury one midweek game, and I think there was about 30 people at the game, and that was like behind closed doors, if you like. And it was rubbish. It's just rubbish, to be honest with you. As for the top games, I think they've got a bit more at stake, if you like. But it's just the atmosphere is not quite the same, if you know what I mean. Obviously, the fans create the atmosphere, and that kind of influences a lot of the game, whether you're attacking, defending, playing well, not playing well.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I don't really... It's just like a practice game, personally. We'll see how it goes. Wednesday night, I think, the first game.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that'll be interesting. I've watched a few of the German games, and I'm not a huge fan of watching football behind closed doors. I've got to be honest with you. It doesn't overly appeal to me. If it has to be done, there's financial reasons involved. And then great. I want to move on to your football career. So you moved from Scottish junior football to Leicester City in your younger days. You spent 3 years there. Can you be such a big football club?
Well, it was just a tremendous change of environment personally. I came from a small mining village, playing for a local junior team, and then moving to Leicester in England with my wife. We were just newly married at the time, and it was a big change. Quite fast on the football front, and within a year I was kind of in the first team and whatnot. It was a fantastic experience, but like in football, all types of football, the manager comes in. If he likes you, he likes you. If he doesn't, he doesn't. So I moved on then to Dunedin. Which was a step down, but I do remember at the time football was going through a kind of a sort of low stage at that time. It weren't quite as it is today, if you like, obviously. But I was quite happy at Dunedin. It was a good bunch of lads. Manager was Graham Carr, who obviously Weymouth fans would know of, and we had a good time there. And then through one thing and another, Dunedin they got relegated, basically. They were thrown down a league, which I felt at the time it wasn't my fault. It was for financial reasons. So I just asked for a move. And eventually it was either, if I remember right, it was either Kettering or Weymouth.
Yeah. And, two big non-league football clubs.
Yeah. They were, yeah, Kettering was a big club at the time, and Weymouth, yeah, it was great. But the only thing about Weymouth is that I actually came down for talks with the manager, and I had to ask directions.
Yeah, right.
I didn't know how we get there.
And actually, there was a signing on fee for Weymouth signed you from the Neaton. This was in July 1987 for £5,000. I mean, back then, was that considered a lot of money for a transfer fee?
Probably for a left back, yeah.
For a very good left back, though, it must be said.
Well, I think they got their money's worth, but yeah, at the time, yeah, I didn't, be honest with you, and I probably think it's like that nowadays. The transfer fee doesn't seem to affect the player, if you know what I mean. I didn't think let it worry me or think it was too much or not enough. I just got on with the football, and yeah.
I mean, you were voted as Players' Player of the Year in the 1987-88 season at Weymouth.
Was I?
Yeah, you were. I've got it in front of me, and I hope it's correct, because it's come from our website, so I assume it is. And you also voted Player of the Year in 1994.
Ryan doesn't make mistakes, you're all right.
Occasionally. But, you know, just on that, Players' Player of the Year, I want to touch on that, because to get that sort of accolade from your teammates, does that almost mean more sometimes than, you know, the fan or the manager's accolades, because they're the ones that are with you week in, week out?
Well, yeah, it's quite an honour, and it is, especially for a left back. Again, normally your strikers get the accolades, if you like. They win the games for you, but I always feel that defenders win games just as much as the strikers, and just as much as goalies win games. So, but no, getting the awards from your fellow players is a good honour, as is any honour, to be honest with you. Any player of the year from supporters, fans, manager, whatever, is an honour.
Absolutely. You played both at the Rec and at the, well, it was the Wessex at the time, Wessex Stadium.
Right.
I've never really asked this question to a player that's, you know, played at both grounds, because it's probably quite rare. What was the difference between the Rec and the new stadium that's now not very new, I know, but, you know, at the time, what was it like going into a different environment?
I always enjoyed playing down the Wessex. And I used to hate coming down to the old Weymouth ground because I was having to play against like people like Anione and Ghana, people like that. And we used to dread coming to Weymouth. But the actual ground itself was it was a really traditional old football ground, and it was, if I do remember right, it was like 700, 800 crowds, and it used to get a good atmosphere. Terrible pitch.
We've heard that.
Yeah, I do remember it was. We didn't like coming to Weymouth because of the players who actually played for them.
yeah, and it was some star names back then.
That's right.
Absolutely. 449 appearances for the club, scoring just the 6 goals. Out of them 6 goals, I know it's not really your job to score goals as a left back. Do you have a memorable goal that stood out for you? I've asked this question to you before, I know, personally, but just for the listeners.
I don't actually... Well, I do remember two sort of come to mind. The first one I remember was when Steve Claridge used to play for us, we used to like give him the ball and then just stand and watch because we never knew what he was going to do with it.
Yeah.
And I do remember one time, it was actually... I think it was Dagenham or somewhere away in London anyway. And I was sort of near halfway. I gave him the ball. He was out in the wide. And I thought, I'll just keep going forward. And he actually passed it back into me and I scored from it, which it was more of a shock than actually scoring, I think. But and then the other one was, it was an FA Cup game against Barnstaple at home. And I cut in from the left and scored with my right foot, which is probably more surprising than the first one, to be honest with you. But there you go.
Were you surprised yourself when you saw it fly into the net?
I did, because it could have gone anywhere, really. It was just one of them. It just happened to hit it right and it went in. And it was, crikey, how did I do that?
Yeah, how on earth has that happened? Yeah,
sort of, why didn't I try that a bit more often? But there you go.
Willie, you had two spells as caretaker manager. Now, probably something that people don't necessarily talk about as much in your career. Was management something you didn't really fancy?
It wasn't. I was kind of not forced into it, obviously, but I was asked to take sort of help keep the club moving along at the time and that. And if I do, the one thing I do remember at the time is the club, they didn't have much money. It wasn't a case of, we were kind of struggling. It wasn't a case of like you could just buy yourself up the league or whatever. And it was kind of a case of just keeping the club rolling until somebody come in. And funnily enough, I do remember one time I was helping the club out is Len Ashurst joined the club as manager, and that was brilliant as far as I was concerned, because he had such a good reputation, and we learned a lot from him. He was very good.
Yeah. Willie, also another one, I had the honour of sponsoring your Hall of Fame award back in 2019.
Yeah,
I know you.
That was great. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know you personally and you're not one for accolades and things like that, but no. I'm sure that when you know, were mentioned in the sort of names that were sort of inducted into that Hall of Fame, that must have been a proud moment for you and your family. Am I right?
Well, yeah, you're right. Yeah, it was. And I thought, why me? Like, there surely must be a few more others that deserve it. And I expect there'll be a few more next year as well. Yeah, for the whole family and everything. My nippers, he've grown up, like, you know, running on the pitch after the game for a kick about in the goals and whatnot. And my wife always come to all the games with him. And it was a good time in my life for the kids and growing up. And also the club. I mean, they went, when I joined, they've kind of gone a kind of roller coaster, like a lot of non-league clubs do. And at the time I was there, they just certainly went on a roller coaster, mainly up and then down.
But, the yo-yo system going on there.
But no, I just still I just try to go out and enjoy the game every time, whether we're top of the league as in the first season or bottom of the league in other seasons. We still try to go out and enjoy the game.
Willie, Ben here, you've obviously settled in the area. Can I ask you a personal question? What's it like working for Dave Wilson? Because I've heard he's a bit of a tyrant.
A tyrant? No. He's a pussycat. He is, isn't he? I've known Dave for a long time because I used to work at another company and he was actually the apprentice. And I remember him working then. And he was a nice lad then. And but no, he's good as gold. He's a terrific boss and a really good company to work for. I'd highly recommend them.
What is the name of the company? Just well, let's give him a plug.
It's Weymouth Precision Engineering, up in the Granby, obviously.
That's Weymouth Precision Engineering, and it's
a Dave, sponsor of the football club as well.
Who also sponsor the football club, but they are a really good company, and Dave is a good guy, even if he does look like Alf from Home and Away. But no, thank you for that. But no, Precision Engineering on the Granbury. If you've got any engineering needs, please go and visit them. Willie Gibson works there, and my friend Dave Wilson is the owner. And I'm going to throw back over to Josh now. I've done my bit.
Yeah, Willie, I know that you're you still come and watch when you can. You saw the side win the Southern League. Is it last season? Do you say last season now? I suppose you kind of say 2 seasons ago. How pleased were you for Mark Moseley and his team? Because I know you kept a keen interest in that.
I just it's such a breath of fresh air when the bloke took over. Like, is I don't know him personally, but I just obviously I listen to what he says and read what he says in the Echo, and he's such a He's very educated, and he knows, obviously, through his getting a job at Bournemouth, he's obviously well-respected there, working with the younger lads and that. But no, I think he's done brilliant for Weymouth. And it's... You kind of go and watch him and you think, this is how his team plays at Bournemouth, and this is how Bournemouth play. And to get that at this level of football, I think it's terrific, because... You know, obviously, you've seen some of the games, and the teams don't always play like you'd like teams to play. But no, I think it's been brilliant in the last couple of years, and I'm sure the reputation of Weymouth will have grown through the non-league circle. And I just hope he does stay a bit longer.
Yeah, we all share that view. Willie, we'll let you go shortly, but just a couple more from me. You obviously live in the town, you watch the team, you've played for the team 449 times, which is which is an incredible time. Wore the captain's armband as well. I just want to, you were club captain, you've worn that armband. For a player, I mean, for you, was that even more of an honour as well?
Well, yeah, of course. It's kind of like... It's not ambassador for the club, but you're leading the team out, and it's you obviously play, you set an example, you sort of got to keep them in order at times, and just being captain of any club is a bit of an honour. I was never captain at Leicester, obviously. Never captain at White and Nuneaton, and then to be made captain is there's not a lot more you can say about it. It's sort of highest in the club, like, it's great.
Willie, I'm reliably informed that you've played with George Best, is that correct?
Sort of. I played with him and I played against him.
Wow, that must have been,
two occasions.
Yeah
it's I will admit, it was in his latter stages of his career. But the first time I did play against him, it was actually for Leicester in a friendly against Hibernian.
Wow.
And that was up in Edinburgh. And I think, actually, I'd just joined the club and I was involved, basically, because I come from that area. So they took me back up and played. But yeah, I'm not so sure what age he was, but... You couldn't get near him, kind of thing. He was brilliant.
Yeah, and I mean, for the rest of your... Sorry, you carry on, Willie.
Yeah, the second time was that when I played at Nuneaton, we had a pre-season friendly against Coventry, who were a local team. And our chairman, he was Irish, and he just seemed to have so many contacts that we had Muhammad Ali on the pitch one night.
Wow.
And then when we had George Best playing for us, so me and the lads all just come in to the game. There's four of us from Leicester, and we came over in the car, like, sat down, and he's just sat there. He was just like a normal bloke, and he came out, played for us. He was fantastic.
Wow.
Absolutely brilliant. You couldn't get near him in the game. He was, it was great. It's such it was an honour, really.
And you can say for the rest of your life that you've played with and against George Best, I guess.
Oh, yeah, I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I mean, you think of Weymouth, they had a lot of good players come and play for them. I know that it was obviously in the latter stage of the career and that. I remember Frank Worthington playing. He played probably, I don't know, four or five games just. But he was class, like, that's the only way you describe him. And, brilliant.
Yeah, definitely. Willie, we won't keep you too much longer.
That's all right, mate. I'm quite enjoying this.
No, I'm glad. I mean, I'm...
Nothing else to do, is there?
Exactly. It's not as if we can go to the pub or anything like that and do a quiz.
No.
But then, you know, we'd have to speak to our friend John as well. I'm sure he'll listen into this as well later on when it goes out later. Willie, just finally, have you got a word for the Terrace fans and people you know, people listening, those people that have tuned in just to listen to you? And I know there are a few of them.
I'm very surprised, to be honest with you. But I've quite enjoyed it, actually. When players like nothing better than talking about the old days, and you'll find this. But no, it's been a great 10 years at Weymouth as a player and whatnot, and I hope they just get over this virus thing that we've got here and get back to normal next season, and then we can all get back down to Essex and have another good year.
Absolutely. Willie, all that's left to say is thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Enjoy the rest and enjoy the rest of your weekend, and yeah, hopefully it won't be too long.
Every day's a weekend at the moment, Josh, don't worry about it, mate.
I thought you might say that then. And hopefully it's not too long before we're back in the pub doing the quiz.
That's right, yeah.
Willie, thank you so much. We appreciate it. Thank you. Take care.
That's okay. Thank you, Josh. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Willie Gibson, ladies and gentlemen, a pleasure to hear from an absolute Terrors legend, Willie Gibson. I'm reliably informed, a guy called Sean Hill was a very good friend of the podcast, reliably informs me he's the best left-back we've ever had at the football club. So that is obviously a pleasure to speak to him. Josh did most of the heavy lifting there, it must be said. Moving on, Cam Murray will be joining us momentarily. And after him, we've got Kelvin Brooks. So I'm going to take the opportunity to play this clip for Kelvin Brooks in anticipation for him coming on in a little bit.
I also read something when I was doing some research for this, Stuart. I read that on your cricket debut, you took a 5-wicket haul. Is there any sport you can't play?
No, to be fair, there's not. I'm a dab hand at most things, to be honest. I do like a bit of cricket. A little bit of golf. I think Kelvin Brooks is a keen cricketer as well, if my memory serves correctly. I think Kel plays a bit of cricket. So if you get him on, you want to ask him about that, because he seems to think he's a budding cricketer as well.
See, I sent some kind of online... I think if we hook the two of you up on Twitter, we could set some sort of challenge up here. What do you reckon?
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah, I mean, you can probably look, if you look at me and Kel, you probably see we've got very similar body shapes, both very athletic. I would back myself in any cricketing situation against Kel. I'd definitely back myself.
There you go, Kelvin. If you're listening, then get in contact on Twitter and we can set something up for next week. That's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
So, Kelvin Brooks, that was a good 2 months ago that challenge was issued, and you seem to have gone uncharacteristically quiet, but you're on the show shortly, so we will be bringing that up, so get your excuses in ready. We're joined by Cameron Murray, I believe. Cameron Murray, how are you doing?
I'm doing better, all right?
Yeah, not too bad. What's your reaction to this in-out of the playoff situation? How are you feeling mentally at the moment?
It's one of them, really. For myself, to be honest, obviously my focus throughout this period has obviously been about getting myself up and running after my injury. Because to an extent, obviously, that's the only thing that I can control. So in terms of the decision, or the sort of the decision that's not being made at this minute, whether we return to play the playoffs or we don't, obviously, the play, you've just got to get yourself ready for whatever decision is made.
Okay, so talking about your fitness, are you back to, well, full fitness? I know you can't be match sharp, obviously, but are you feeling fit and ready to go?
Yeah, of course. Obviously, obviously, I had my surgery, and then I was unable to see any physio or go and see the surgeon, because obviously I wasn't able to go into hospital to go for my checkup. So obviously I have to do it all myself. But I've seen my surgeon actually last week for the first time, and she's really impressed how I've got on. So all going well, to be fair. All going well. I'm back running. I've obviously had the ball out myself, and I've been doing plenty of fitness work. And obviously Yemi's gym workouts have kept me going, so all good on that front.
How are Yemi's workouts? Are they getting easier or harder?
Yeah, not bad, to be fair. Some days, I think the Saturday ones seem to be a bit more difficult than the Tuesday evening ones. But yeah, they're tough, and it obviously keeps you going. Obviously, he knows his stuff, so it's a nice thing to be able to follow, really. Obviously, as a group, we've sort of been asked by, obviously, the Gaffer and Tom to continually do them in case we do go back for the playoffs.
Let's go back to the playoffs for a second. What is your instinct? What's on Cameron Murray's mind? Obviously, I know you're focusing on your own fitness and things like that, but do you think that they should go ahead? What's your thinking?
I think it's a difficult one, because at the start of the week, obviously, coming from the journalists and stuff, and the stuff that you read on Twitter, and obviously other platforms, it seemed more likely that we would play the playoffs, but then obviously, come yesterday, it seems now that it's more like we won't. So it's obviously up and down, and until an actual decision is made, you know, I don't really have an opinion on it, because it's not something I can control, and all I can do is, like I say, keep fit. As a player, it's kind of out of your realm, and it's up to the bodies to make what they believe is the right decision. Obviously, one thing I'll say is the National League is going ahead of the playoffs, then my only sort of opinion would be that why then can't obviously the National League North and the National League South, because there's big clubs in both them leagues, and obviously there are players who take this very seriously. You know, for some people, whether it be the Conference South or the Conference North, it is their full-time job, so it's something you take really seriously. So obviously if the National League's going ahead, I don't see why it would be, let's say, fair for the National League South and North not to go ahead. So that's my only opinion, really. Obviously the chairman and obviously has a more insightful opinion on that.
Well, talking about jobs and full-time jobs, it was revealed on, I think it was the very first podcast, wasn't it, Josh? It was revealed that you are studying stocks and shares. First of all, where are my tips? And secondly, how are you getting on with that? How are you feeling about the stocks and shares world?
I don't think I'm at the level to be giving out any financial investment right now. but yeah, it's something that I do kind of, I've been practicing, I do every day. I think, obviously, the lockdown period and my injury, it's sort of been an opportunity to sort of pursue different avenues. And I found myself in that one, for some strange reason. And it's all going well. It's quite in depth. But I enjoy doing it, so it comes easier, I suppose, if you enjoy something. Doesn't seem like work to me. Yeah, I'm obviously enjoying it. Obviously, I'm going down. I'm studying my PGC next year as well, to become a qualified teacher. So I've also got that to think about. But so yeah, I don't think I'll be giving out any tips just yet.
Well, I've been waiting close to my Twitter account for these DMs to come in to make me thousands of pounds. Cam, you've let me down so far.
First one, then, Ben. get going and doing well. You were the first.
I appreciate that. I need all the help I can get, I can assure you. So is teacher, obviously you'll be a qualified teacher after last year, after next year. Is that something you were always interested in, going into sort of the care and well-being of children and being able to shape minds and things?
If I'm honest, probably not. I think my ambition was to become a professional footballer. No mistake about that. But then even still at the end of the day, I think naturally playing sport, because obviously I would look to become a PE teacher, I think that just naturally lends itself to wanting to then go on to teach it. Obviously, I feel like I've had good experiences in the game of football, and obviously, you know, I love other sports as well. I'm not a cricketer though, like Calvin seems to be. But yeah, I think naturally playing sport, obviously played at professional level, semi-professional level. I think it naturally lends itself to becoming a teacher.
What
something I started off with, but it is kind of now a route. Available to myself.
What are the other sports that you follow, Cam? Obviously, you say you're not a cricketer, but what are the other sports that you watch?
I've always enjoyed playing tennis. I used to play quite a lot of tennis, not at any sort of elite level, but I've always enjoyed playing tennis. I used to play with my dad and my friends and stuff, and I was quite good at tennis. Mixed martial arts, I've never actually pursued it, but I've always enjoyed watching it. And I think in some ways, obviously like boxing, mixed martial arts, I think in some ways them as sports are far ahead of the big sport like football in terms of the way that game is run. So yeah, I quite enjoy mixed martial arts, to be fair. It's only just something that I've got into quite recently over the last few years, but I certainly enjoy it. Although some of the fights on 2-3 a.m. in the morning, so it's not easy.
No, especially if you've had a big game on the day, because they're usually Saturday night, aren't they, the UFC?
It's usually Saturday night, yeah.
Yeah.
It's normally travel, travel back, stay up, watch the UFC.
you know the way I usually leave in this podcast, if somebody mentions another sport, I try and set up a challenge. So is there anybody you fancy an MMA fight with?
I don't think I'd be too good at it, to be fair. I'll give it a go. I don't think it's all in the size, to be fair.
Maybe we'll set something up for sport relief.
Go on, say
it again? Maybe we'll set something up for sport relief.
Oh, yeah, I'd do it. If it was for charity, I'd get involved.
I'm sure Calvin will probably be a world champion or something.
Well, I mean, Calvin talks a big game, doesn't he? Like, he talks a big cricket game, but we haven't heard a peep out of him since.
Obviously he's got to do his cricket challenge first.
Oh yeah.
I think a few boys like it. I think Josh McCoy, Ben Thompson, they both watch a little bit of it. So.
Well, Ben Thompson barely watches football, does he?
No, I don't know what he watches. I don't know what he gets up to in his spare time, to be honest.
Have you got any funny stories from the road this year, Cam? Because everything seems to be, with this team, it seems to be frustratingly close-guarded. Any away day secrets or things like that? Are there any stories you can tell? Anything that would make the listeners laugh, perhaps?
Any stories I can tell?
Yeah, welcome to being put on the spot, by the way.
Yeah, no, it all goes into one big blur, I suppose. There's obviously loads of stories and loads of little things that are continually happening through the season, which is one of the things that obviously makes it, you know, so enjoyable, as well as actually taking part and playing the football. Obviously the banter with the lads and the dressing room, and because we've got such a good group, you know, we all get on, like you say, we all have that banter. But think of a story on the spot, I'm not sure really.
It's very diplomatic.
That's what I think, get back to you.
It's very diplomatic. I don't like this, you know. We're fishing for controversy here, man.
Some things have got to stay in house, I suppose.
Have you got a favourite moment of the season? Obviously, we're sort of half reflecting because we're not sure about the playoffs at the moment, so we're half reflecting on the season and things like that. I remember how excited I was when you signed from that lot up the road, because you played really well on Boxing Day against us, and we thought you were the only decent player. And then you joined us. That was last season. Have you got any highlights from the past 12 months?
Well, obviously for myself, not obviously the majority of the time, but quite a lot of it has been spent in the stands watching, which is obviously, it's strange, really, because I've never really been one to be injured or out of the game for too long. So then when you have to go through that experience and you're able to then sort of be in with the fans and experience it from, you know, a more of a fan's perspective, it's certainly different. And I've enjoyed it as well, and it's also good to view the game, you know, from the stand sometimes. You learn a lot about your own game, what you can do, and you're able to obviously watch the laps. So just in general, just sort of, I've sort of taken the positives out of being sort of injured and being able to obviously watch the game and that really. But for, in terms of a moment, I think it was one of Baggy's goals. I think it was quite late on, which he seems to often pop up and score a late equaliser or a late winner. But I can't remember who it was against, but it was quite a late goal. And I can remember just obviously the Bob Lucas erupted, and I was obviously part of that. So it was quite nice to be sort of in with the fans, I suppose, rather than be out on the field. Although, obviously, you know, I would most definitely like to be back on the field. I hope that's sooner rather than later.
Well, the playoffs in July, hopefully. But no, let's not keep going on about the playoffs. have you got any overriding memories of playing for Dorchester, incidentally? Because I'm sure both of their supporters would be quite interested of hearing from you, what the sort of setup is like at their club.
To be fair, obviously I've only just come down south from obviously up north. Dorchester was the first, because obviously in the pre-season I came down, I went on trial with Dorchester, and obviously they signed me on like a non-contract basis, and I fully did enjoy my time there, really enjoyed it. The gaffer who at the time was sound with me. When Wayman came in for me, you know, they didn't stop me from leaving or anything like that. So, to be honest, all I can say is good things about Dorchester. You know, it gave me the opportunity to build a career down here, I suppose. So, obviously, I know most of the Wayman family don't like Dorch, but to be fair, they was always good with me, so...
I've got a Dorchester scarf, I've got to say.
You've got a Dorchester scarf? Josh has got a Dorchester scarf, apparently. This is a breaking news in the podcast studio. What do you mean you've got a...
Let's not go there.
You've brought it up now. What do you mean you've got a Dorchester scarf?
Well, just a New Year present, that was all.
A New Year present?
Right. Yeah.
Why?
Keeps me warm, doesn't it? You know. Anyway, start talking to Cam and Murray. You don't want to hear me. Just thought I'd...
Cam, can you believe this nonsense? Do you know what I mean?
Well, not sure about that. If you're a fan, you've got to stick to one team.
What's your views? What we're talking about scarves. What's your views on half and half scarves?
I'm not a fan of half and half scarves. See. Not a fan. Like, obviously, I'm a Celtic fan, so the last thing that me and my dad will be doing going up to watch Celtic is have a Rangers badge on me with half the scarves. It's not on, is it? It's not on.
It's not, is it? I went to Old Trafford with a group of mates once, and one of them bought a half and half scarf, and I literally refused to talk to him all the way home. It's disgraceful. I don't like them at all. But I've already had.
I think it's one of the things, isn't it? It's a money maker, and two, for those that, I don't know, they're really football fans, or they're just going for the experience and the occasion. So.
Just going for the day out, aren't they? Yeah, all day long.
Yeah, exactly.
All day long.
Exactly.
But that's a nice segue, because I was talking about going to Old Trafford and watching Manchester United. Mm. You played for FC United of Manchester, if you're not.
Yep, I did indeed, yeah.
I mean, they've got a very impressive average gate, because obviously, for those of you that don't know, FC United was a Phoenix club after the Glazier takeover of Manchester United in 2005. What is that like? Because, I mean, their ground must be packed on a regular basis, and they sing all the way through, don't they, 90 minutes. It must be quite intimidating for the opposition, I would have thought.
Well, yeah, you can see that, to be fair. I don't know if you follow their results, but obviously when I played for them, the amount of time that you go in sort of down at half-time, like 1 or 2-0, and then you come out and you end up winning 3-2, 4-3, simply because at that level of football and in that league, the amount of fans that they get is obviously extremely high. They're a bit like the Wayman fans in that they go home and away, which is massive for the lads, and it always feels like a big occasion when you play there. I think their home record is far. I don't know if you look at the stats, but I think the home record is far better than the away record, which goes to show how much of an impact it does make having so many fans in the stadium. And it's a really good club, to be fair. It's a little bit strange. It's hard to explain, really. It's different to any other club that I've been at. I didn't actually get the opportunities footballing-wise that I would have liked to. I was only young at the time, and we sort of had an established team that had just got promoted. So it was kind of hard to break my way into that team. But it was a really good club, and the stadium was really impressive for the level of football. It had like the 3G outside the front, and so you could train 2 and 3 times a week. So they had all the facilities, to be fair. So it is a good club.
I mean, yeah, it was interesting watching them develop, because obviously after the Glazier takeover in 2005, they came from absolutely nothing. They had to, they were holding open trials at one point in the park, weren't they? And it's
if I can remember rightly, I can't remember the timescale, but I think I'd just come back from Spain, because I played football out in Spain, and initially before moving out to Spain for the football, I was looking at like college courses. And I think there was a college course at Manchester that ran alongside FC United at the time.
Oh, okay.
I actually applied for that, and I went for like, sort of like the, you have to almost have a trial to get into the college football. And obviously I did that, and the manager, Carl Mardinson at the time, said, look, I want you to come play for FC United. But then I actually went and moved out to Spain. I think it was that way around, I can't quite remember now. Oh, I signed for somebody else, and then I ended up getting back in contact with Carl Marginson, who was at FC United, a few years later. So that's when I actually joined the club. But before that, I did actually go on kind of at like the trials. And obviously the club at that stage didn't have the facilities that it does now, so they have actually come a long way. But even at that, it was like a local pitch. I can remember being on it, and there was hundreds of people there, and it was literally just like your normal park football field.
They've
come a long way.
And also, you went on a Scotland under 15 training camp in 2010, is that right?
Yeah.
What was that experience like?
Well, that was immense, yeah. I was playing for Belfast City at the time in the academy. I think the manager of Scotland at that age group at the time was Ross Maffey. And obviously, I got invited up to train with them. So, obviously, travelled up to Scotland. We got changed, I think, at Hampden, and then we set off to to their training facility, trained with them for a week, played like a few in-house games. And in general, it was just a really good experience. There were some really talented players in that group who was going to make and have a good career. I think there was one in particular called Jack Harper. And at the time he was playing for Real Madrid, and I think he still now plays for Malaga. And I think he had a spell at Brighton as well. I'm not sure he broke into the first team there, but he was a really good player. And then a few other lads have gone and played Celtic, Aberdeen. But yeah, it was a really, really good experience. Really enjoyed it.
Because obviously you were born in England. Did you qualify for Scotland through your parents, grandparents?
Yeah, my dad's side of the family is all Scottish. My mum's side of the family is Irish. So got both Scotland and Irish in there. So yeah. Probably where the Celtic connection comes from.
Absolutely. Were they Glasgow born?
Yeah, my dad's born in Glasgow, yeah.
Lovely stuff. So, obviously, you're not a fan of Rangers at all. So,
I'm not a fan of Rangers.
So, any players listening, a half and half Rangers and Celtic scarf for the secret Santa for Cameron Murray would be ideal, I think. What do you think, Josh?
Interestingly, Willie Gibson, the club legend.
I'll give that, Josh.
Yeah, interestingly, Willie Gibson, who was just on before, club legend, is a Rangers fan. So, it's been a bit of a Glasgow, Celtic and Rangers theme today.
I like it.
See, I'd fall down with... I think Aberdeen are the best guide in Scotland, personally. I like Aberdeen.
Of course you would.
Well, I just think...
They're calling the best guy. When's the last time they won the league?
Well, I mean, alright, best club, perhaps? I don't know.
You're trying to be controversial, admit it.
No, I'm just bored of the old firm winning the league every year.
To be fair, it should be an opportunity to come down to the Prem, I think.
Do you think they survive in the Prem, in all seriousness? Because, I mean, with no disrespect, watching Scottish football is painful at times. Do you think they'd survive in the Premier League? I'm not so sure.
You've got to look at it. The way I look at it is they're a massive club. They get 60,000 every week. And you obviously know how important it is to have a lot of fans.
Of course.
And look at Bournemouth. Little Bournemouth went to the Prem with a government squad that, you might look at and think, oh, is that Premier League class? And look how well it's done. I think, to be honest, it's about the manager. It's about the current group of players and the fans. The Yeah, the current Celtic squad may not, I don't know, have the ability to do well in the Premiership, but the amount of players that would be attracted to Celtic if they were in the Premiership, earning the big bucks in front of 60,000 every week, against playing against Manchester United, and all, you know, you don't even need to. I'm sure they'd come good eventually. I'm pretty sure Rangers would as well. So.
Well, I don't know. I mean, if you look at it that way, in the structures of clubs and things like that, don't forget Sunderland and Portsmouth both get sort of 30,000 gates, and they're down in League One. And you know, I know Portsmouth have got the playoffs, but
that just proves that it's essentially about how it's run, I suppose. You know, that Sunderland. Yeah. I don't know if you've watched it on the Netflix thingy, and it's really good, that show,
by the way.
Yeah, it's really good. It's a nice insight. And was that club run well? No. So there's your answer, I suppose. It all goes down to, I suppose, how it's run.
I mean, carry on.
I just think that any club, you know, I think it's difficult to say, oh, will they hack it in the Prem, but without doubt, I think that Celtic would. Not just because of Sport Celtic, but because of a big club.
Perhaps one of them could take Bury's place in League One.
I don't think they'd settle for that tomorrow.
Well, I don't think they can be choosy, to be honest. Josh, have you got anything to add?
No. I think all angles have been covered.
Okay, well, Cam, we're going to let you get back to your Saturday, mate. But thank you for joining us. It is always a pleasure talking to you. And best of luck with the rest of the recovery, and best of luck with the stocks and shares. And again, I'll wait for my tips. But no, thank you very much, Cam. It's been a real pleasure talking to you, mate.
Pleasure. I just said, well, obviously, welcome to the new labs. Hopefully, get to meet the two lads. Two new signings soon. So.
And you're planning their initiation song, is that right?
I don't like initiation songs, so it probably won't be me, but I'll leave that up to McCoy or McCarthy.
Yeah. Or Kelv. I'll ask Kelv in a second, because we're about to get Kelv on the line. Perfect. Well, once again, thank you very much, Cam, and we will speak to you really soon.
Nice one. See you later on, guys. Take care.
See you, Cam. Bye-bye. Cheers. Thank you.
Cameron Murray, ladies and gentlemen. And so as you heard there, Kelvin Brooks will be on the show momentarily. We've played the clip from Stuart Yetton. There's no hiding place for you, Kelvin, so make sure that you're ready for your answers. And I need your help. I need your help, Weymouth supporters. While Josh is getting Kelvin ready, and we're going to get him in studio, I've been having a discussion with my beautiful girlfriend, and she wants to, can you believe this? She's a lifelong Newcastle United supporter, which is totally understandable, it's where she's from. But she wants to keep wearing Newcastle shirts, and she wants a very good reason to wear a Weymouth shirt instead. So I've said that I will put it out on the podcast this afternoon, and the Terrace fans are going to contact me on Twitter and give the best reasons that she can possibly have to wear a Weymouth shirt rather than her hometown Newcastle. So don't let me down, guys. Come and contact us on Twitter at BenAshelford1 or at the Terrors, either one. They'll manage to get through to me eventually. And give us some very good reasons that I can screenshot and send to my girlfriend to obviously wear that Weymouth shirt. Because, well, you know, frankly, it's better than anything else. And I think Kelvin Brooks is on the phone. Hello, Kelvin Brooks, how are you doing?
Yeah, not bad, how are you?
I'm not too bad, but your silence has been deafening for the past few weeks.
Has it?
Well, Stuart Yetton came on a good, 2 months ago, Josh?
I wouldn't say 2 months, I think a few weeks ago.
A few weeks ago, anyway, and I played the clip earlier, and he challenged you to a cricket challenge, and we've been trying to get in contact with you on Twitter and things like that, but apparently he can outdo you in any cricket scenario. You fancy yourself as a bit of a cricketer, so we've been looking to try and get your response.
But the thing is, you say, I've heard this, I've been told about this cricket challenge, right? Yetz is in Plymouth, and I live in Poole. What sort of, I don't even own a cricket ball, bat, pad, nothing. So, I understand this fantasy of me and Yetz fighting out over a cricket bat, but it's just never going to happen.
I'm sure we can sort it out somewhere, but do you think you could take him?
I'm not overly confident because, like Paul said before, the way that Yetz speaks about himself, you know, he got a 10-wicket haul every other week. So, you know, it sounds like he could have played for England, but he opted to play football instead. So, I'm not massively confident, but, you know, I do all right with the ball in the back.
Okay, so when we can get out of... when we can find a time where we can actually all meet, then we'll do an over a piece. and see what we can do.
Slight problem that there's a global pandemic going on.
And you've just interrupted my second burrito as well, so I'm not happy either.
You say, what's in your burrito?
Little bit of rice, little bit of beef, got some, I don't know, I wasn't me that cooked it. I'm just eating it.
Fair enough.
We are terribly sorry for disturbing your Saturday, Calvin, no, as
I'm
always.
Not. No, I'm not. You speak for yourself.
On a serious note, Calvin, obviously we've had the to-ing and fro-ing. Are the playoffs going to take place? Are they not? What's been your view on it over the last week? We still aren't really any clearer to knowing what's going on, are we?
No, to be honest with you, I haven't been worrying about it too much, you know, since kind of the last Slough game we had. At the end of the day, as far as I'm aware, it's out of the players' hands. So, you know, we just do as we're told. If we're playing, we're told we're playing, great. If we're not, then, you know, it's unfortunate, but, you know, we move on. It's a bit of a blunt way to put it, but I'm just not one of them people that's going to, you know, sit here biting my nails day after day worrying what's going to happen. You know, it's dragged on and on and on. We've all been staying in shape just in case. In my personal opinion, I was never expecting it to be on, but I've been, you know, keeping myself ready in case it is. And, you know, I'll keep doing that until we're told otherwise.
And obviously, do you think it's almost more important that we come back to football when it is absolutely safe to do so? Why should a Premier League, I mean, the Premier League's coming back, assuming that's safe to do so, they've got the test and they've got the capacity to do it. My question, I guess, is, surely it's more important for you as players to come back when it's absolutely safe?
Yeah, I mean, I think I might have said this before, but there's a lot of people in certain situations, you know, and even players, you know, might be in around their own squad that have got family and, you know, young kids and, you know, people that are at risk, you know, grandparents, parents, stuff like that. And, you know, those players deserve to be playing in a safe environment, you know.
Yeah.
It's the same as every other working environment. So if the government and if the league decide it's safe to play, then great, you know. I know the boys are chomping at the bit to get back out there and play, you know, and until that day we just wait. That's all you can do, you know, and that's why I said to you, I'm not getting too stressed about it, because otherwise, you know, you'd be kind of driving yourself up the wall. You just got to follow the guidelines, and as simple as that.
Yeah, and I think it's easy, isn't it, for people to work themselves up over these sort of things, but in the grand scheme of things, you know, is it that important, really?
Of course, for us, you know, and for everyone, you know, similar to yourselves that, you know, that love the football club so much, it would be, you know, it'd be incredible to have that opportunity to play in the playoffs. You know, we can't hide that. But like you're saying, Josh, you know, you've got to kind of put that against people's livelihoods and, you know, the more important things in life. And you know, as I say, all we can do is just do as we're told. You know, I'm not the type of person that's going to go, you know, stamping my feet and saying this is what should be happening, this is what should be happening. I'm sure the league are, you know, are very capable to decide what's going to be going on, and all we can do, as I say, is follow what we're told.
I know one thing for sure, Dave Tune misses all of you greatly.
Yeah, he's been ringing the boys randomly, to be fair.
Really?
I've had, like, loads of messages coming in saying Tooney's ringing me, and it's like the weirdest, like, it's the most random people. Like, to be fair, me, Tomo and Zoobs and maybe even Wellesley, we've all known Tooney for quite a few years now, and you'd expect that to be us, like, to get in the calls, but it's some of the lads that have only been there a season now, they're getting the random calls off of Tooney, and I think they're a little bit surprised and a bit shocked by it. But, you know, we just say, look, it's Tooney, you know. That's the only excuse he needs.
I think the fact that it's Tooney just covers everything, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly that.
We're going to rename this the Dave Tune Podcast, we think.
Yeah, I know he's been painting and doing his head in. He's missing football. He's missing going down the Swan for his cup of coffee with his friends. So, Tooney, I'm sure you're listening. Hopefully it's not too long before we're back out there. Calvin... Yeah. Are you looking forward to a potential return to pre-season? I know you're a big fan of pre-season schedules and things like that.
Yeah, I love pre-season. Nah. Pre-season, eh? Oh, yeah. Well, listen, I am excited to get back, you know. more so just because we'll be closer to the actual games and, you know, get back around the boys and, you know, miss all of that side of things. So I am really excited to get back. I'm not excited to start doing the doggies around the pitch.
With social distancing.
Some of the stuff they drew up for us last year was just horrendous.
And of course now it'd be with social distancing, which probably, you know, adds a different dimension to it, should we say.
That'll probably do me a favour. Some of the lads stink after the time they've done the first run. Your Tomos, your Mark Childs and that, they just absolutely reek. You think they wouldn't, cause they spend a lot of time in the gym. But, you know, that'll do me a solid. Like, travelling in the car with Childsy and Josh Wakefield, it's just a nightmare after a pre-season session. Just stink the whole car out.
Brilliant.
The only one that's all right is Yemi, to be fair. You know, but the other two, absolutely. That's our four, by the way, so...
Well, I mean, I don't know what else to say apart from that's not very pleasant for you.
Yeah, it's all right. I've sat next to Tony on the coach before, so it's
I'm not going to mention people I sit next to because I'll get in trouble. But Calvin, I just want to bring you back to the Hampton and Richmond game last season. Obviously, who knows what this season will mean now, but what it does mean is we've had a brilliant season back. But that game, we've probably touched on it before, but let's do it again. Absolutely horrendous conditions. I think we were in the middle of Storm Dennis or whatever it was at the time. 2-0 down against the wind. Actually missed a penalty in various chances in that half, even though the wind was against us and everything else was against us. We turned it around to win 3-2. You scored two goals that day. We have mentioned it before, but let's mention it again. When the third goal went in and your second, there seemed to be a massive release of emotion from you. And I know, all joking aside, how much the club does mean to you. I mean, when you score a goal like that in front of the away fans, that, you know, they've all had a few beers, they've all enjoyed their day, does it mean that bit more?
Yeah, I think one of the reasons it was such a kind of big release was, I think I said before, I'd had a little spell on the sidelines just before that.
Yeah.
And it was just so tough. You know, I'd never really struggled too much of injuries, touch wood. So that was a bit of an eye-opener for me. And then, you know, you just work so hard in the background trying to keep your fitness up because, you know, as soon as you get to that point where, you know, you're clear to play again, you need to be match fit, you need to be able to make an impact. So it's all that hard work, all the, you know, the gym sessions after going to work, between training sessions and all that sort of stuff. And then, you know, for it to pay off, at the end of it all, it was a really, really nice feeling. And, you know, it was a strange one that day because we started really fast. And, you know, sometimes when we, you know, if you come in 2-0 down at half time, you expect to have had a slow start. But we started really fast. We were all over them. We were against the wind. We were still putting it in good areas. But obviously, we won the penalty. Obviously, missed the penalty. But, you know, we had a couple of chances. I think it was someone hit the post as well.
Yeah. Brett.
And then next week, you know, we found ourselves 2-0 down, which was really, really disappointing. But I remember they had a shot right at the end of the first half, and it hit me and then hit Zoobs and went out for a corner. And I kind of had a feeling when we blocked that shot and the half-time whistle went, that we got out of there. And even though we were 2-0 down, we still, you know, we actually said, you know, we played all right the first half. And the fact that, you know, we kind of weathered the conditions. And I think the boys just said, like, you know, we're 2-0 down. There's nothing to lose here. But we knew we were going to go hell for leather. We knew that we were just going to... I mean, the first half, the two fullbacks were told to stay close to the centre-halves, you know, watching for the long balls just dropping over the top of us. And it was just complete different game plan in the second half. It was both fullbacks to go as high as they wanted. The wingers were going to push on and get near the strikers. The midfielders were going to just get as close to the strikers as they could for the second ball. And they just couldn't get out. And then they showed how difficult it was in the second half and probably how well we did in the first half. And obviously we got the three goals. And, you know, I think if we probably needed more, we could have got more as well.
Yeah, and you were there hanging at the back post. What a moment that was in the season. I remember speaking to you many times on away games and even home games when you turned up to watch the lads during your spell out injured. And you kept saying to me, it shouldn't be too long, Josh, you know, it might be a week, 2 weeks. That injury, I mean, I don't obviously want to go on too much about difficult times like that, but that injury did seem to just drag, didn't it?
Yeah, so like I said, I just landed funny on my heel with the Dorking game after about 5 minutes away, and I just couldn't get myself going again after. And I remember seeing Ben, and he was I said fine to carry on. I just couldn't get myself up to 100%, and obviously went and got it checked out after. They just didn't really know what was wrong. And obviously, every kind of week or two, I was trying to train, and every time I planted my foot to strike a ball or do something, I was just getting a massive shoot pain in my heel, and it was just, I just couldn't play, physically couldn't play, so it just kept dragging on a little bit longer, than, I mean, I thought it would be a week to 2 weeks, it turned out to be about 6 weeks in the end, so, but yeah, it was a bit of a tough time, but, you know, that's football for you, isn't it, as players that have been for a lot worse.
Yeah, absolutely. Josh Leslie-Smith and Jack Dixon have signed from Paul Town today. It's been announced anyway. Do you know anything about them lads? I mean, they seem like good acquisitions for the club.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know either of them personally, to be honest. Obviously, I know quite a few of the players and stuff at Paul Town, so you know, everything I've been told about both of the lads have been good. Apart from the fact that Jack Dixon, I've heard, is going to give Tomo a run for his money at the thickest in the squad. So that'll be fun to see. Another one for Mo's to scream that the whole time through the training session. Now we obviously lost Brett, so it'd be a competition out them too. But no, I've heard good things about both of them. I had a text off of Bates earlier saying that Josh Leslie-Smith's the poshest bloke he's ever met. So I don't know how he's going to fit in our changing room.
I'm hearing Paul, mate. I've heard from various other people that he's sort of studying for degrees and things like that, so
yeah, but he'll have Tomo absolutely hammering him the whole way home from the away game, so I don't know how long it'll last. By the looks of things, you know, we've signed two really, really good players, and it doesn't surprise me. You look at, you know, the squad that we've got, it's a young squad, people that want to get better, people that want to work hard, and those two seem like, you know, good young players, been around the level for, you know, a while, and obviously that, you know, Josh Leslie-Smith being able to play centre half is going to be a big thing for us, because obviously we lost quite a few of the Bournemouth loanees, so I think I was going to have to get dragged back there, and I wasn't going to want to have to do that, so good news for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Tom Prodomo was on earlier and used the word versatility and said sometimes it can be used in a derogatory way, but I guess, you know, if you're versatile and can play in various positions, a little bit like yourself, I guess. I remember you actually started at Weymouth, certainly, as a centre-half. I guess if you're competent enough to play in them positions, then happy days.
Yeah, it seems like something that the staff are kind of trying to implement in the squad. You know, you mentioned myself, playing quite a few positions. You know, players like Josh McCoy, playing in the 10 on the wing, you know, even up front. Jake McCarthy can play centre mid, you know, further forward, play centre half. So you have got that versatility within the squad. So, you know, if you can add to that, then brilliant. It's great to get, you know, for me personally, I like to get one position nailed down. But, you know, if the gaffer turns around to me and says, I need you to play here today, like he did in the Slough game last season, you get on with it and do a job for the team. You know, I'd rather be in the team than not in the team. So.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the main thing. We won't keep you too long, Calvin, because it's the weekend and we know that, you know, we'll
let you get back to your burrito.
And has everyone else been on before me as well?
Yeah, we
saved you for the main event.
Everyone got bored by Cambo's voice, didn't they?
No.
Well, I mean, No.
But the Premier League is returning on Wednesday behind closed doors. We asked Willie Gibson, a club legend, Hall of Fame inductee, about playing behind closed doors, and he said that he has experienced it. What are your thoughts on that? Obviously, it's inevitable that it has to be behind closed doors for safety reasons. As a fan of football and somebody that I know that watches football, you know, is it that bit more sort of strange?
Well, I've played at
King's
Langley a few times, and that's basically behind closed doors.
You actually you played in goal at King's Langley, if I remember right.
Yeah, I know, and there was no one to boot because there was no one on the ground, so. There's a couple of Weymouth fans, but that, you know, nothing from the home end. So we're a little bit more used to it. What was the other one? St Ives.
Oh my!
It looked like about five people had rocked up from the pub.
that,
To be fair, that's five more than Dortch normally get, Cal. So.
What I was actually going to come on to say, are you sure they weren't five of our directors?
For us, it's a bit, we're a bit more used to it. You know, one week you'd end up at Maidstone playing for like 2,500 or Dulwich, and then you know, next week you're somewhere else and there's hardly anyone there. But for them, I'm sure it's going to be a really strange sort of experience. You know, I've heard that they're putting the background noise into some of the games at the moment, which I just find weird.
Yeah.
But, you know, without saying that, like, my brother watched the Dortmund Bayern game, and it was just, you know, all you could hear was the ball sort of echoing around as it was getting past it. I appreciate the fact that they're trying to get where they are going to finish the season, because even though I'm not a Liverpool fan, I really do believe that Liverpool should have the opportunity to win the league, and not just be given or it to be taken away from them. You know, it doesn't matter who you support in football, you know, you should want that. You know, that team have earned it, so that, you know, they should have the opportunity to finish the season and pick up the trophy. But it's, I do find it all a bit strange. I've got to admit, football's nothing without the fans. More so than ever at the moment, so it's only going to be a good thing after this, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I watch a lot of international football, a lot of German, I've watched the South Korean. The difference for pumping the volume in the stadium, South Korea, was it sounded tinny and artificial, but I was watching the Dortmund game this afternoon, and the way they'd pumped the, I think it was Dusseldorf, and the way they pumped the sound in, it sounded really, you wouldn't have noticed if it wasn't on TV. If you were listening on the radio, it would have sounded authentic, so to speak. But that's not really something we could do at this level, is it? Potentially. There's no real way we could put it over our tannoy and pump noise in.
Not really. That'd be even more weird, I think.
I think we might, should we get Tuny to try it?
I mean, and also... Well, look, I mean, from a Newcastle perspective as well, Newcastle United, I'm sure it would give you an opportunity to retain your status in the Premier League.
I'm a little bit concerned, if I'm honest, but it's one of those, if it was called off where it was, then it'd be a bit safer. But I don't know, with Newcastle, you know, it's such a tough one. All this rumours, you know, what's going on, but we're still kind of square one. Still got Steve Bruce in charge, which is great. But, you know, there's a few Newcastle fans on me, but, you know, Billy's a big Newcastle fan, he's a good mate of mine still, so...
Yeah.
We have chats every other week or so, just talking about what's going to go on at the club and all that sort of stuff. But hopefully, just stay up. You know, that seems to be the kind of view in the camp at the moment. Just stay up, and then hopefully, Mr. Ashley will get the club sold, and we can push on from there with all that lovely money.
Cal, I don't know if you were listening to the show earlier, but my girlfriend's from Newcastle, and she happens to be a Newcastle shirt, and she's a Newcastle supporter. She wants to know if there's any reason she should change her Newcastle shirt for a Weymouth one. Can you help me out, mate?
Probably because of the colours.
That'll do. See, because of the colours.
You've been practising, Calvin, I tell you.
Pardon?
I said you've been practising.
Oh, it's diplomacy.
Probably because of the colours, yeah. That's what I'd go for. I think it doesn't go down too well with you.
I don't mind it. I just, you know, from a boyfriend point of view, I'd just like her to wear a Weymouth shirt. That was all. And she seems to be resisting, which, you know.
What if she wanted Brooks on the back?
That's, would you be having
a... That's not a problem.
Your brother, or yourself?
Me, obviously.
There's no accounting for taste, I guess. So. Well, on that note, I think. Have you got anything to add, Josh?
No, not really. Calvin has entertained us as ever, and had no idea about the cricket match that we was banging on about, so yeah, all angles covered.
I did see people telling it, and I heard about it, that, you know, it's a challenge thing to this thing, but I just thought, that's a typical Stuart Yetton thing to do, do you know what I mean? He's talking about how he's better, like, so much better than me, but he knows that there could be no competition. He knows that we can't go head to head, we can't lock horns. Yeah, he's probably my favourite player I've ever played with at Weymouth, so I let him off.
Fair enough. I can't argue with that. You can't blame us for trying, though, Kel.
What a charismatic bloke that guy is.
He really is.
I had a shot when I saw Weymouth, and I met him. In my first training session, he was... Sorry, I'm going over it.
No, you carry on.
My first training session, I turned up, right, we're all ready to go. Yep's had no kit with him, so he was wearing some untight, like, spandex undershorts, and a vest with his boots, and David giving him some socks from about 14 years ago. And he was just running around in that with his terrible haircut and his beard, and I just thought, what have I done? You coming here?
Seriously?
I swear to God, that's what Jax was wearing in my first training session. It looked like he just raided the lost property box and there was nothing in there. It was so bad. I looked at Chris McPhee, obviously being, you know, he's a little bit upper class, just sort of lifted his nose up and just sort of turned the other way. But I thought, I'm in for a ride here.
I mean, I'm sure you've got a story or two to
Yeah, if there are any more, don't hold back, Kelf. You've got a couple of minutes.
Well, it was only because you mentioned Yetz, wasn't it? And honestly, some of the stuff, that bloke, I can't even explain, but that's why I say he's my favourite Weymouth. He just made every trip, he just changed every trip from being a kind of, you know, 4-hour drive back from St Ives or wherever it was. I absolutely killed them in this pod, but just, he's absolutely, you know, all the band, him and Mickey Greeno together were just incredible. I don't know how Greeno had a job as a coach for so long, but he did. I don't know, but he was cracking on the way home.
Yeah, he's still window cleaning in around Weymouth as well.
He's still hanging about, he still tweets me every other week, so yeah.
Yeah, he's on Facebook now as well, so watch out. He's on every social media coming up, so
yeah,
I'm sure we'll see him join.
All he used to talk about was how much money he had as well, how many times he'd gone to Spain that year, and how much money he had.
Yeah, and he come back.
They had a hell of a lot of change at the camp recently, didn't they?
Well, yeah, you're not wrong.
That's what I have to get over to some of the boys that are there now, to say hello, this is how lucky you are.
Well, people like me ended up as directors. I don't know what happened there, but... anyway,
they promoted from within. See, we got the good ones and got rid of the bad ones.
Exactly. That's the exact right answer for that one. Calvin, yeah. We're going to let you go. Just before you go, though, it's a cliche old question now, I guess. But any sort of messages for the supporters or anybody else you want to sort of give a message to at this time?
I think last time I gave a message that was just. To stay safe and to check on each other. It's the same sort of message for me. You know, there's people out there that will be struggling. I've known quite a few people that have come to me over this period and said that I am struggling, and it's you know, you feel honoured that people will come to you and talk about how they're feeling, because it's a difficult thing to do. It's something that I've kind of experienced a lot around my own family. The people that do struggle and don't talk about it. So if you are struggling, talk to them about it. If you're ill, speak to someone that might be. Just reach out to people. Keep checking on each other. And we'll get back. We need to get back. So, yeah, Tinder. Up the terrors.
We absolutely echo them sentiments. Cal, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon. And do enjoy the rest of your weekend. Cheers. Thanks, mate.
Yeah, cheers.
Just to echo what Kelvin Brooks said there, and I've been saying it for months on end, I know I went on a little rant earlier regarding the playoffs and the EFL and things like that, but mental health, especially in these times, is so, so important to look after. So if anybody is struggling, you know, get in touch with somebody. Don't be afraid to speak out or to talk, and look after each other, as Kelvin Brooks has just quite rightly said there. These times are so unprecedented and so scary for everybody involved that people with existing mental health conditions can often be forgotten and stuff like that. So be good neighbours, be good friends, be good people, check in on everybody. Josh, anything to add before we wrap this up?
It's been a bit of an exciting day. Obviously, the announcement of the two new players earlier, Josh Leslie-Smith and Jack Dixon from Poole. The ongoing situation with the National League South playoff positions. We will be back next week with some new guests. We will look out for some interviews with the new players as well, because we'll be hoping to get them done and potentially having a couple of them, one of them on the podcast next week. That would be absolutely brilliant. So, yeah, all that's left for me is enjoy the rest of your weekend, everybody.
And all that's left for me is just to thank the guests that came on this afternoon. Tom Prodomo, Chairman Ian White, with a very insightful point of view. The legend that is Wee Gibson, Cameron Murray, the Stocks and Shares megastar, and Kelvin Brooks, as entertaining as ever. Thank you all for taking your time out and listening to us. Thank you to the guests for coming on. Thank you to Josh for co-hosting, and we will be back next week. Up the terrace.